Okay, so we're diving into this Second Circuit case, Williams v. Citigroup. It's a story about, one woman going up against like a huge bank. But what's really interesting to me, at least, is how it shows us some of the like really important details of civil procedure, the things that can totally change how a case turns out.
Oh, absolutely. This case, it just throws us right into this tension that always exists in law, like those solid decisions, but you also got to have that flexibility so people can fine tune their arguments.
Yeah.
Even after, a judgment's been made.
Exactly. So to set the scene, we have Linda Grant Williams. She's a lawyer, specializes in structured finance. Mm-hmm. She comes up with this new structure for what are called airline special facility bonds, ASF bonds. Mm. They're used to finance like those big airport projects.
And Williams, she's convinced that her structure is, way better than anything else out there. She says it would be a win-win for the airlines, the cities, the people holding the bonds, even the banks that underwrite these bonds.
Okay, so it sounds like a good idea. But when she pitches it to Citigroup, and, they're a big player in this ASF bond market, they say no.
Right.
And things go downhill for Williams after that. Eventually, she loses her job.
Yeah.
And she thinks there's something fishy going on, like maybe even a conspiracy.
Oh, wow.
So she decides to take Citigroup to court.
Makes sense.
Her lawsuit, it gets filed in the Southern District of New York. It alleges that Citigroup violated the Sherman Act, which falls under antitrust law. Mm. But she also throws in some state-level claims, like tortious interference with contracts.
So mixing it up a little.
Yeah. But here's where things get, like, really interesting procedurally. The district court, they dismiss her whole case. The federal claims, the state claims, everything. And they do it with prejudice.
With prejudice? Legally, that means she can't just refile these same claims in the same court.
Yeah, pretty tough.
It is.
But Williams, she doesn't give up. She appeals to the Second Circuit. But what's interesting here isn't really about if those antitrust claims were right or wrong, but it's more about all the procedural back and forth that happens next.
Yeah, the maneuvering.
It's like a legal chess match.
Yeah.
And usually if you think your complaint has issues, you try to amend it before the judge makes a decision.
Right.
But Williams does something different. She waits until after her case is dismissed and then asks to amend her complaint.
Hmm. An interesting strategy.
It is. As you might expect, the district court, they say no. They're like, look, the game's over. We made a judgment. And we need to have finality here.
Makes sense.
You'd think that would be the end of it. Mm. But the Second Circuit, they're like, hold on, not so fast. They actually say the district court made a mistake.
Oh, wow. They overturned it.
Well, sort of. What's really interesting is their reasoning. They put a lot of emphasis on Rule 15 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. That rule, it basically encourages courts to be open to parties amending their complaints, especially if it's a matter of justice. It's kind of like a safety net built into the system.
Okay, I see.
And they even cite this big case, Foeman v. Davis. It lays out all these factors that courts need to think about when someone wants to amend their complaint. Things like, was there too much delay? Did they act in bad faith? Would it hurt the other side? And this is a big one. Would those changes actually be pointless? Like, would they even fix the problems?
So you have to weigh all those things.
Yeah, you got to find that balance.
Yeah.
The Second Circuit is basically saying, hey, the district court jumped the gun. They focused on the need for a final decision without even looking at whether Williams' proposed changes had any merit. They're saying the order in which you do things matters.
The sequence is important.
Exactly. So what they do is they send the case back to the district court with instructions. They tell them to analyze how likely it is that the amendments would be futile before making any decisions. And this is where things get really interesting.
Because this whole ruling, it isn't just about amendments, right? The Second Circuit, they use this case to, like, clarify another tricky area, supplemental jurisdiction.
Oh, yeah, supplemental jurisdiction. That's one of those things that can really make you scratch your head.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, it means, like, a federal court, they can sometimes hear claims that are based on state law, but only if those state law claims are connected to, the federal claims in that case.
Okay, so it's all got to be related.
Right, right. It keeps everything nice and tidy, under one roof.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's like a package deal.
Yeah.
But what did the Second Circuit actually say about this?
Well, they emphasize that, you know, when those federal claims get dismissed early on, the usual thing to do is to dismiss those state law claims without prejudice. So that means that the plaintiff, they can go and refile those state claims in state court.
Ah, so it keeps that part of the case alive.
Exactly, exactly. And that creates, like, these interesting strategic options for both sides, you know?
Oh, how so?
Well, like, a plaintiff, they might actually be happy to have those state law claims dismissed from federal court. You know, maybe they think they'll have a better chance if they're in state court.
Yeah, that makes sense. Different courts, different judges, maybe even a different jury pool. It's all about, you know, playing the odds.
Exactly. And then on the other hand, you've got the defendant. They might want to keep everything bundled up together in federal court if they think that, you know, that court's going to be more favorable to them. This case, it really shows how these procedural decisions can totally change how a case plays out.
Yeah, like I said, it's a chess match.
Yeah.
Every move has consequences. And sometimes those consequences, they're more about procedure than about the actual claims themselves.
That's it, yeah. And speaking of consequences, you know, think about this. The Second Circuit, they really emphasized Rule 15, right? So could this lead to more plaintiffs trying to file amendments after a judgment's already been made, knowing they might have the safety net?
That's a good point. It could. I mean, on the one hand, it might make some plaintiffs less careful with those initial complaints. They might figure, well, if I miss something, I can always try to fix it later.
Right, right. But then again, think about it. If we're too rigid, you know, what happens to those plaintiffs who do have a legitimate claim? What if they made some kind of technical mistake in their first complaint? Shouldn't they have a chance to fix that?
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's a tough balance to strike. We don't want to encourage, like, sloppy lawyering.
Right.
But we also don't want to have a system where valid claims get thrown out just because of, you know, a small procedural error.
Yeah, absolutely. And this case, it shows us how courts are wrestling with that very tension. You know, it's a reminder that procedure matters a lot, but it's not the only thing that matters.
Right. And this isn't just for lawyers, right? Anyone who's ever had to deal with, like, a bureaucracy or a formal complaint process, they can probably relate to this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Understanding these procedural things, it can give you a real edge. Knowing what your options are, knowing your rights, knowing when you should push back, that can be so important.
It's like knowing how to play the game. Even if you've got a strong argument, if you don't know the rules, you're going to lose.
Couldn't have said it better myself. But remember, even with all these rules and procedures, you can still be strategic. You know, you can still think outside the box.
And that's what makes it so interesting. This case, it reminds us that even in law, where things can seem so strict, there's still room for flexibility, for fighting to make sure your voice gets heard. And hey, sometimes even for second chances.
Exactly, exactly. And that brings us to a question we want to leave you with. You know, thinking about all this, does all this focus on, you know, being flexible, even after a judgment, does it make the initial complaint process less, I don't know, less strict? Could it lead to people just, like, throwing things out there and seeing what sticks?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, if plaintiffs know that they might get a second chance to kind of, you know, adjust their arguments, are they going to be as careful the first time around?
Right.
It's possible.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, isn't there also a risk if things are too rigid? Like, what about those plaintiffs who, you know, they have a valid claim, but maybe they made some small technical mistake in their first complaint? Shouldn't they at least get a chance to fix that?
Oh, absolutely. That's where finding that right balance becomes so crucial. You know, we don't want to be encouraging, you know, lawyers to be sloppy or anything.
Right.
But we also don't want a system where someone's legitimate claim gets tossed out just because of some tiny little procedural error.
Right. Right. So it seems like this case, it's not just about, you know, ASF bonds or antitrust law. It's really about, like, the bigger ideas of fairness and access to justice.
Exactly. It makes us think about what we really value in our legal system, right? Do we care more about speed and efficiency, even if it means there might be some mistakes? Or is it more important to make sure that everyone gets a fair shot, even if that means things move a little slower?
It's a tough question. No easy answers. Mm. But that's kind of what makes this case so interesting. You know, it's not just about the legal outcome for this particular plaintiff. It's about how this all impacts the bigger picture of civil procedure.
And for our listeners, you know, whether you're a lawyer, a law student, or just someone who's, you know, interested in the legal world, this case is a really good reminder. Procedure, it matters, but it's not the only thing that matters. Knowing the rules is important, but you also got to know when to ask for some flexibility, when to push back against things being too rigid.
It's about, being strategic, thinking creatively, and never giving up on your right to have your voice heard. And sometimes it's about knowing that even when you hit a roadblock, there might be a second chance just around the corner.